Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues, produced by the Hauck Foundation for Mental Health. The Hauck Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hello there, and welcome to another episode of Into the Fold. I am your host, Ike Evans. For this episode, we have something special that I hope that you enjoy. In recognition of March being Women's History Month, we're going to be reaching deep into our archives to introduce you to a remarkable woman who I am sure that most of you have probably never heard of, F.W.A. Sutherland. She was a trailblazing Ghanaian playwright, director, children's author, poet, educator, researcher, child advocate, and cultural activist. And did you know that she once appeared on The Human Condition, a radio series produced by the Hauck Foundation that ran from 1971 to 1983 on KUT, hosted by Bert Krueger Smith? What you're going to hear in just a moment is an interview in which the playwright discusses her work, her art, and about theater as a space of healing. But before we get to that, a little bit more about our theme. So, March is Women's History Month. As you could probably guess, the history of the Hauck Foundation could not be written without women. There is, of course, Bert Krueger Smith, who I have talked about on the podcast previously, who worked from the Hauck Foundation from 1952 until she retired in 1983. She left an indelible mark as one of the most influential employees in the foundation's history as a program officer, writer, speaker, radio host, and of course, as an advocate for mental health, and then later in her life, an advocate for the elderly. There's Bernice Moore, whose estate established the Moore Fellowship in 1995. The fellowship is for doctoral candidates who have a primary research interest of the human experience in crises, including those resulting from natural or other major disasters. There's Frances Fowler Wallace, who left half of her estate to the foundation as a fund for research. Her memory lives on in the Frances Fowler Wallace Memorial Award for Dissertation Research, which the foundation has been awarding to qualified doctoral students since 1974. And of course, there's Miss Ima Hogg herself, the Hauck Foundation's principal founder, benefactor, and driving inspiration from the time of the foundation's creation in 1940 to her passing in 1974 at the age of 95. And that brings us to F.W.A. Sutherland. F.W.A. Sutherland is a giant in her native country of Ghana, Africa. She founded the Ghana Drama Studio, the Ghana Society of Writers, the Ghana Experimental Theater, and a community project called the Kotsedan, or Story House. She was an influential figure in the development of modern Ghanaian theater, and helped to popularize the study of African performance traditions at the university level. So, without further ado, I give you F.W.A. Sutherland talking to Bert Krueger Smith in this vintage interview on the human condition.
From Communications Center, the University of Texas at Austin, this is another program in the series, The Human Condition.
They are children like children everywhere, you know, biologically, in their makeup and psychology and so on. There's that universality about them. They are interested in the same thing. Sometimes you'll be amazed, you know, what... You know, they steal mangoes, not apples, but it's the same kind of behavior, you see.
F.W.A. Sutherland, a famous woman writer and theater authority in Ghana, is this week's guest on The Human Condition. We're pleased to have you in our country, and we're interested in learning about your country and your work.
Thank you.
You have done much in the theater and in literature. I'd like to ask you if you would begin by telling us how you got started in your interest in writing and in drama.
Mm.
What is your purpose in so doing?
Well, my purpose is to help develop the literature of my country, both adult literature and juvenile literature, because we need to do this, you know, in the process we are in of self-rediscovery and, building up our sense of our own identity and putting this out in every direction we can, through education and through the theater, etc.
I'm sure in the field of mental health, we read a lot and learn a lot about how important it is for children to have a positive self-concept.
Yes.
And I think what I hear you saying is that if all of your literature is imported from other countries and other cultures, your children cannot develop such a self-concept. Is that correct?
Yes, you sense it correctly. It has to be that way, that, you know, the image of the book, you know, is a self-image. You open a book and it's about you, not always about other people, you see. And for educationally, it is absolutely necessary to make an effort to give our children that kind of a book, because he has been fed on other things for too long. You know, and it does do damage to oneself, sense of oneself.
And only if you can feel good about yourself can you feel good about other people.
That's correct, because a confused identity is really no good to anybody in this world, is it?
Not at all. Tell me, Mrs. Sutherland, how long has this effort been going on in your country to bring African literature and education and of drama to the children of your country?
It's been going on, I would time it with our independence era. It had to be that way. About 1957, we all got busy in creative writing associations in Ghana. And this movement really Africa-wide, you know. Every country that has become independent has felt the need to do this, to first rediscover the traditional literature, and then out of it there's an aegis of new literature, both for adults and for children.
But it must have been very difficult for those of you who were the pioneers, because you really had no model to go by. You had been fed on literature from other societies. How did you muster the strength? How did you have the self-concept to begin to develop this whole new literature?
I must correct you there. We did have models, you know, because literature is not strange enough, is not a strange commodity. In African culture, we have a lot of literature. Not written, mind you. So actually the word literature is a misnomer. It connotes something written, but we have a fantastic wealth of verbal art, the poetry and narratives, epics, legends, folk tales, the lot. And it is it happens to be to have in form and style and in content, and just its awareness of the true African environment, you know, which supports our lives. And so it is incomparable. So we did have that for models.
I stand corrected. I was thinking of written literature.
That's
and
right.
You had just said you didn't have that. So the first thing you did was to go out and try to capture,
yes,
on paper, in words, some of this marvelous literature which was,
yes,
in the minds and hearts and of many people.
Also, not just in the minds and hearts, but used in daily life. really used in daily life. You go to the market, that literature is in use to sell things in the market. You find a mother feeding her baby, that literature is in lullabies, that she's actually singing to the child. Is there some long-forgotten thing that we are trying to root out? It is an alive literature, you know.
Well, you were observers and recorders then, initially.
Yes.
To
yes.
capture from these people all of this marvelous
yes.
richness
yes.
and to put it down.
Yes, and it is there to capture, thank God.
It would be tragic to have it lost, and I suppose it came close to being lost.
Yes, but it is not going to get lost, believe me.
Now, was there a small group of you, many of you? How did you start, or did you start like... in different places at the same time and then find one another?
For instance, in Ghana, you know, what the story I'm telling is pretty representative. And in Ghana, one person got the idea, I got an idea that I should try and contact an older generation of writers, you know, pre-independence writers, very famous writers. For instance, Dr. J.B. Dankwa, the famous politician and intellectual. And there were several of his generation who had tried to point attention to the need to create, you know, our own literature. So actually, when I got the idea that a Creative Writers Association would be a good medium through which to try and do this new thing. I consulted these people. One of them was Dr. Buzia. He was erstwhile president of Ghana. He's a sociologist and a writer. So I brought these people together. We had a small meeting, and one of them has just died in the U.S. here. He was at Brockport. Mr. Dayanan, famous Ghanaian poet, and we agreed that this would be a good thing to do. So we put the word out, and a group of us were formed in September 1957. And off we were with the Ghana Society of Writers, and people were writing. We'd have regular meetings, you know, readings and so on, until time came when we could get to the creation of a magazine for this new writing, and it's done very well. I can sit here now and look back and see from 1957 to now how our numbers have grown in Ghana.
Must be an amazing comfort and delight to you.
Yes.
I suppose that creative and committed people cannot be stopped anywhere. We see this in other oppressed countries. We see this with underground writers and, say, the Jews in the Soviet Union. Somehow, if they're creative and have a story to tell, and it's important, they find a way to
yes,
get the message.
Yes, also, if they are creative and not only have a story to tell, but feel a part of a society, you know, vitally so, and want to see that society make it in this world. Yes.
You do a great deal, do you not, Mrs. Sutherland, in the area of drama?
Mm-hmm.
And I suppose, in a way, that drama is literature plus, in a sense, because people are bringing not only the words and the concept, but there are things that happen to their bodies and their emotions as they act this out.
Yes.
Is this a strong medium? Is this one reason?
Yes, drama is perhaps Africa's strongest medium. And it is less on words and more on emotion expression through the body, through dance, through the voice, the singing voice, you see, and through an accompaniment of this music, you know, this singing voice with instruments like the drums and xylophones, and you know, and Africa is the home of the drum. You can imagine small drums and big drum, big father drums and big mother drums and little drums and medium-sized drums, yes.
Now, I'm sure the children respond with enthusiasm to this kind of dramatic portrayal, because it does call on all of the natural abilities of children, the dance and so forth. How young do these children start?
Oh, very young. And I suppose it would interest you very much if you came out there and there was a musical performance and you saw mothers with their babies on the back. That's where it begins, you know. The babies learn to dance on their mothers' backs. You know, the mother is dancing, the baby is there, and you can see the child, the rhythm going from mother to child, you know, that way. It's
the baby feels the vibration.
Yes, and, you know, children by 3 and so on, by 5, they are marvelous dancers. When Ghana went to FESTAC, the Festival of African Arts in Nigeria in the 70s, we sent some child dancers, you know, and really I hope that some of this kind of expression can reach you over here. So, you know, you can see, you know, what an accomplished dancer, a child can be, who doesn't have to go to a special school, you know, to learn it, but it's part of life to be able to dance, you know, and you learn to do so from childhood. Unfortunately, school, you go to school and something else happens to you, and now children in Africa who cannot, who are divorced from this saturation, you know, in the dances, and could stand around an event, a dance and music event, you know, with their insides hoping to dance and their inhibitions stopping them.
I'm very ignorant of your country, and I hope you will excuse me if I ask questions which are simplistic, but could you give us some portrayal of what are the lives of children in your country? Are most of them able to go to school, for example? What kinds of lives do they live? Give me a picture.
Oh, I'll be glad to. My country, you could call it mostly a rural country. There are towns, and we are trying to imitate you and build cities, I think. So I suppose eventually we'll have cities, many cities. Right now we only have a few towns. I think it's the same picture in every African country, most African countries south of the Sahara. But children live mostly in these very pleasant forested areas or grasslands and so forth. And they are children like children everywhere, you know, biologically, in their makeup and psychology and so on. There's that universality about them. They are interested in the same thing. Sometimes you'll be amazed, you know, what, you know, they steal mangoes, not apples, but it's the same kind of behavior, you see. But children are perhaps more a part of life, and perhaps in rural America you have the same thing going on, where children participate in the economic life of their families. If you have to fetch water for the family and there is no flowing water coming right piped into the home, you just go with your parents to the river and help to get that water. If he's farming and there are some weeding activities you can do, you do that. If you're a fisherman, you belong to a fishing society, and your father has spent all night catching the fish out there in the sea, you're going to eat some of that fish, or he's going to buy you clothes when it is sold. So you should help to carry that fish home and help perhaps in the smoking processes and so on. But not all children are in rural areas. There are some in cities. And there's really very little difference between them and children living in cities. and cities here.
I think that people we discover are much more alike than different in all countries.
Yes.
It sounds from your description that the children in your country are living the kind of life that the children in America lived in the early 20th century, where they were very much a part of the family activities and
yes.
very integrated.
Don't you think that's a good idea?
I believe that we have come too far from our children's participation in the product of their lives. And
yes.
this has been a problem in this country.
Yeah, because when we, you know, I believe we have been talking about children and rights. I believe very, very much in the rights of children and a great advocate, you know. I also believe in the duties of the child, you know. Very much so, because otherwise, if children are not taught about duty and so on, they grow up to be rather inane citizens, don't they?
You have this marvelous African literature. Now, do the children, do all of them learn to read? How can they be recipients of this wonderful literature that you're producing?
Fortunately, those of them who live in the rural communities, when I say rural, there's a coloration on the word, and we ought to be a little careful, because in Africa, it is there that the power of African culture is. And so, in fact, I'm talking about very sophisticated societies culturally, and the rural dwelling children are lucky in this respect, because they live that culture and daily touch, you know, with that literature, because it is a literature, as I said, that is in use.
But they don't have the benefit of the written literature as much. Is that correct?
They don't, and I am very curious about a future in which all this literature is in books, because I want to know whether it will remain alive when it is in books. It could die there.
But you felt it important to put it in books.
Yes, I do, for documentation's sake. But we must never forget, when we put it there in the books, we must never forget that it is documentation, and continue right on living that literature.
I'd like to ask you about a writer or two, and I don't know your feelings about Alan Paton's Cry the Beloved Country, which was one of the first...
It's old literature. We passed that phase a long time ago.
But when it came out, it was a true portrayal. I thought it was sensitive.
Well, I don't know about that. And we loved that book, you know, in West Africa. It's still read in the schools and so forth.
Mm-hmm. What about Alex Haley's Roots?
Actually, I'm here to buy that book and read it. I've heard about it. The time when it came, we don't get books, because you have to import them, and you know, some of us are poor countries without enough foreign exchange, you know, to split between food and books. And so I've come here to, I hope, that's one of the books I hope to be buying. The film came to Ghana, the American Center, you know, in Ghana showed it. But unfortunately, I was too busy with my going about my father's business to see any of it. And one afternoon, I was particularly interested in going to that film, but I was sitting on the Ghana National Commission on Children, you know, board meeting, and that too was important. That's the future.
One of the reasons that I mentioned it is that so much of what he learned came down, just as you spoke, from person to person, from
yes.
songs, from
yes.
poems.
Yes.
And I suppose that so much of our knowledge of culture in so many, many countries has come down that way.
Yes. You have your folk music culture, don't you? And that comes from, they say it comes from where the boondocks. Isn't that what you call it?
Right.
Anyway, you have your folk literature, just like we do. You know, we... some societies which are lucky, like Ghanaian society, we are living it, you know, in various ceremonials. That literature is functional, and so forth. So I want that live, you know, existence of our literature.
Do you find that since 1957, there are a lot of young writers who have come up, who are taking the torch and are carrying on from there?
Yes, there are several young writers all over Africa. The writer population is building up. Very good, very heartening.
Is your writers' group still in existence and vital?
Yes, there are many writers' groups now in Ghana, several, including a group, a program for high school and high school level, you know, training college students. They publish a magazine called Talent for Tomorrow. And, oh, that's very interesting. There's a very fine lady here in America called Ellen Gersangster, who put that program together when she was in Ghana. And, you know, because she saw the children, she was teaching a secondary school, and she saw their difficulties trying to express themselves authentically in a foreign language, that's English. And she put this program together, the Creative Writers Program for Secondary Schools and Training Colleges. And out of it came this beautiful magazine called Talent for Tomorrow. I worked with Mrs. Sangster, and I do hope I see her on this trip. She's old, and I want very much to see this lady.
Do the children in Ghana learn English also? Your English is so beautiful. Is this
there are various problems with language policy, you know, in education in various African countries, French African countries, you know, English speaking countries and so on. But we are thinking about solving the problem.
Mrs. Sutherland, I'm going to ask you in our very last 2 minutes,
yes,
if you would sum up for our listeners, what can be accomplished? What do you hope can be accomplished by visits such as yours from Ghana, from an African country, to ours?
Oh, well, let me go by my experience, you know, in the drama department of the University of Texas at Austin. Is that the correct?
Correct.
Yes, sir. For instance, yesterday, you know, I spoke to a group, and there was a large number of high school kids there, and communication flew very well between us. I like that, and I was glad to see them so open, so authentically interested in another culture and so on, because this is going to be a very international world, you know, and for young people to be open to cultural exchange, you know, communication is wonderful. I saw that and I was very happy yesterday.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Sutherland. Mm-hmm. This week on The Human Condition, we have been talking with Ifwa Sutherland, who is a very famous woman writer from Ghana. If you are interested in having material on this or similar subjects, you are welcome to write to Radio, The Hogg, HOGG, Foundation for Mental Health, the University of Texas, Austin, Texas, 78712.
I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I encourage you to learn more about Ifwa Sutherland and just find a way to, you know, celebrate her contributions to culture, or at least learn more about them. The dialogue that you just heard is one example of the rich history captured in Conversation for the Human Condition during its near 400-episode run. The show explored mental health, philosophy, sociology, and other aspects of what it means to be human. A sample of the show archive can be found on iTunes and Apple Podcasts. You'll find a link in the episode description. Some women who are part of the Hogg family made history in ways they never intended or asked for. Such was the case with Linda Swan Adkins, who was an employee of the Hogg Foundation on that horrible day in August 1966 when Charles Whitman shot and killed 22 people from the observation deck of the UT Tower at the University of Texas at Austin. Swan Atkins was in her 20s at the time. We reached out to her to provide a short oral history of that day, which we presented as a podcast shortly after the 50th anniversary of that tragic event. Here's a snippet.
I just graduated from UT in May and started working at the Hogg Foundation as a secretary when the tower shooting occurred. On August the 1st, 1966, around noon, I was about to leave for lunch. I decided to stop in the restroom, which was in the stairwell, before I left. When I opened the door, I saw lots of smoke and heard a man yelling, "Help me, help me, help me." Then I heard a loud noise like someone pushing down metal folding chairs on a concrete floor. I had never been around guns, so I didn't recognize the sound. I ran to get my boss, Dave Latz, who was a retired Air Force Lieutenant Colonel. He realized that someone was shooting and gathered everyone into an office furthest from the stairwell.
What you just heard was from episode 33, Nightmare at Noon, the UT Tower Shooting. It is still very much available for download and listen. We hope that you check it out. That's it for this all-too-brief glimpse at some of the women who have enriched our history. Please share this episode, tell people about the podcast, let us know what you think by leaving us a review on either iTunes or the Apple Podcasts app. As a foundation, we believe that we are most effective in transforming mental health at the community level when we focus on historically excluded or marginalized populations. On numerous occasions, past and present, we have made the connection between mental health and well-being on the one hand and a more just and equitable world on the other. That does it for this episode of Into the Fold. Thanks for joining us.